Should we start the episode with a little kitty ASMR?
Sure. Leia perched herself here. She wants it. Give it to us.
What if I just, like, left the microphone and gave her the show for the day?
That would be incredible. It's just a show produced for cats, where it's just cats only.
Kittens inspired by kittens.
I'm her mom. No, she's not. If anyone didn't know we were millennials, they will know now.
It's very obvious now. And if you don't know what we're talking about, just YouTube kittens inspired by kittens and enjoy yourself for a quick two minutes. It's lovely. I sent my mom. Do you remember the woman who it was like her match.com video or something like that? And it was a woman who was like obsessed with cats and she's talking about how sad she is that not like all the cats can't have homes and she just wants to give all of them homes. And she's like, by the end of the video, bawling her eyes out.
No, I don't know if I've ever seen this.
Okay, I'll send that one to you. But my mom, every time I talk to her, because she does a lot of fostering, which is where I get it from. But every time I talk to her, she's just like, it's so upsetting. Like, there's so many cats.
She is that woman.
But she is that woman. And
yeah.
Well, and my mom goes, I have no problem getting dates. Don't worry. I was like, okay.
We know, Aurora. We've seen your dating history. We see your past.
I've heard my mother's dating history. I don't need anything. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
What?
Do I out my mom for this?
This is your choice. I'm not going to encourage you or dissuade you.
No, I won't, because I think she met someone through like a business thing that was like, oh, I listened to that podcast, or she like talks about the podcast and like they listen. I won't out my mother. All I will say, maybe, you know what? I'll do it on a Patreon episode.
For $5 a month, you can get some gossip on Sabrina's family and a whole lot of other things, like ad-free and one-week early episodes and bonus episodes. There's our plug for Patreon. Going right in. That's hilarious.
Honestly, why do I think it's safer behind a paywall? I don't know, but for my mother's sake.
Same. There's some sort of security with our Patreon where I feel like I am way more open there too.
I know. I was going to at people for something that they did recently on our campfire stories.
Oh, I was like, someone on our Patreon?
I don't know if they're on our Patreon, but I was going to at some of our listeners because you know who you are and you know what you did.
They're adding you.
You guys are adding me. But I see. I'm not oblivious. Listen, if I had answers.
We see the inquiring minds, and I'm just sitting here sipping my tea, waiting for the same things you guys are too.
Well, you know everything. Okay, here's the thing. If I had the ability to concisely say anything about anything, I would. I don't.
I guess the best way to think of it is like there's a big stew and it's being stirred around. And you haven't scooped up the helping that you want yet. Does that even make sense?
I put the bay leaf in for a little bit of soaking, and I haven't gotten to the point where you remove it and enjoy the soup.
You're still in the middle of things.
I'm in the thick of it, yeah.
Into the thick of it. Backyardigans.
That's what's in the nose. I don't know why I'm
quoting Backyardigans. Anywho, that was like, I feel like saying everything and nothing at the same time.
Which is what we just did.
So I'm going to read a quote that is on my tea bag leaf to transition us away from this conversation.
What is in the tea leaves today?
It's an Emily Dickinson quote, and it says, how strange that nature does not knock and yet does not intrude. Why can't I understand this? How strange that nature does not knock and yet does not intrude. Oh, okay.
Well, nature, I guess, enters our lives without knocking, but it's not a nuisance. It is a beautiful part of our life.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Anywho, this is Two Girls, One Ghost.
Two Girls, One Ghost. And we are your ghostesses. That is Corinne. I am Sabrina. I'm wearing my new sweatshirt that my sister gave me that says Godmother, and then it has Noemi's name on the sleeve embroidered.
Oh my God, so cute. Wait, I had a dream about you and Noemi last night.
Wait, I had dreams about you last night.
Were we together? Where were we? What time of day was it?
I think you were mean to me.
Oh, sorry.
Wait, oh my gosh. I'm so mad at myself. When my alarm first went off this morning, I woke up from one of those dreams and I was like, oh, like I should write this down right now so I don't forget. But then I was so tired. I was like, I'm going to sleep. Like I woke up at like 5 and my alarm was for like 5:30. I was like, I'm going to sleep my extra 30 minutes. So I forget. What was your dream?
So you don't know if I was mean to you or not?
I feel like we were doing something interesting and exciting. It was a notable dream about you that I was like, oh, I should definitely talk about this when we record.
And now it's forgotten.
Now it's gone.
Well, so in my dream, we were kind of a little bit on an adventure too. I don't know where we were, but it was dark. It was rainy. And we were driving in this black Escalade, except we weren't the drivers. We were the passengers. And you got out and you had to do something. And I feel like I was along for the ride and I didn't actually know really what we were doing. Like you were very much leading the path and I was just kind of like going with the flow. Mm-hmm. You were babysitting Noemi. And in the car, as the car was just like sitting there, you put her kind of like, it's hard to describe, but the Escalade had these cup holders that would like fit a baby. And you put Noemi in them. And I was like, I don't think Sabrina will be that mad if I like take her out and just hold her in the car while the car is parked. Yeah. And so I just kind of laid her down on my legs with my legs together. And she was like looking up at me and I was just like, hi, Noemi. Hi, Noemi. And then you came back and you opened the car door and she looks over and you couldn't hear her yet because you were like very distracted and still talking. And she was like, mama, mama. And I had this panic where I was like, do I tell Sabrina that Noemi called her mama? Would this upset her sister to know that Noemi called her mama? And it was like this thing where I was like, she said something. What if it's her first word? Like, what do I do? Ah! And that was my dream.
Wow. I'm curious now if she's going to say mama, because she hasn't really said any full words yet. Mm. She squeals, which is really cute. But
oh.
I wonder if she'll say mama when we're FaceTiming. And I'm going to tell my sister that she thinks I'm her mom.
Because I had a dream about it and I'm a witch, so.
And you are. I was trying to think like what witchy thing I should start doing.
Well, you've already been doing tarot.
I've been doing my tarot in the morning.
You've dabbled in an oracle deck.
I think I need to go on more walks to the ocean. It's been raining a lot though, so yes. That's in a way.
One interesting fact for you that I learned through my friend Allison who lives in Marblehead is that 100-some years ago, there was this, it was an asylum and it was for women who were, you know, having some issues, were quote unquote like hysterical or whatever, and they would be sent away. Sorry, there's so much construction and it's going to be loud in the background. But they were sent away to this asylum in Marblehead and it was kind of like the treatment was just being by the seaside and getting to read all day and do pottery and walk along the ocean. And it sounds like the best retreat ever, but it was like basically medically what they were sent to do. They would create this pottery. It's Marblehead pottery. And it's actually pottery created by all of these women who were at this like institution 100-some years ago. And now you can find pieces. They're like, I think minimum $400 online. You can find some of them. But there is some that has been like broken up and is in the sea and they wash Whoa. Up still on the beaches in Marblehead. It's a very beautiful
That's
thing.
That's so beautiful.
Yeah. Maybe you should start pottery.
I was going to say, maybe I should become hysterical and travel through time.
Wait, oh my gosh. I can't remember the exact quote, but there's this woman that I follow on TikTok. Her name is like Peaches PCR or something like that. She's a singer from Australia and she's very hilarious. And she's also part of her personality is like being very heavily medicated. She's got a lot going on and she speaks very openly about it. But she was talking about how someone had like another hallucination about her being in a place that she wasn't in. But it took her a while to understand that like she had never actually met this person and it wasn't a true story about her. Because she was like, here's the thing. I've been in the psych ward. And who's to say a girl can't be a little psychotic when she's in the psych ward? And she was just talking about how like she's let herself really feel whatever she wants in there sometimes.
You know, if you are in a place where you are dealing with the hard stuff, whether it's a psych ward or trauma treatment or whatever, it gets worse before it gets better is all I'll say.
This is a horrible transition from that conversation into the episode today, but we're not going to be talking about any of what we previously talked about.
Well, we'll talk about madness in a different way. There is a madness
in the paranormal.
Yeah. And also in a fanaticism of a type of thing, which you're going to start talking about.
That is so true. And who better to talk about this topic than me? Because we're talking about sports, and everyone knows I'm a huge sports girl. I understand all the rules. I know more than five players' names.
What's your favorite sport?
To an actual legit answer, I do really enjoy watching hockey. I get very into it. Every time someone fights, I scream, kiss, kiss, kiss. They never do. It will happen one day, though. I love watching hockey, but I can't name a single player.
That's okay. We also, this is a great opportunity to bring up our lacrosse years.
Yeah, we were lax girls.
We're lax girls. We played lacrosse together at LMU. And I feel like we were pretty good.
Well, here's the thing. Lacrosse is huge in the Northeast. And so when we went to Southern California and just played club lacrosse, we had the advantage of, it was like putting someone who was in middle school with someone who was playing in college a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Because club, anyone can join, right? Like, you don't have to have played ever before. And also, our training was a lot more intense than any of the people who'd played on the West Coast and grew up playing in middle school and high school.
Every spring break, we would go to Florida and play for the full spring break and train for the season.
Yeah. I played year-round, and on my like year-round club team in high school, our coach would sign us up for college tournaments to make us better. We would mostly lose, but it made us so much better. But I think one of the interesting facts, my dad loves to talk about this. He like brags about it. I'm like, Dad, I don't think it's that much of a brag. But you and I, if you actually look at the years that we played lacrosse in the like division we were in, we were like in the top 10 players on the whole West Coast. Do you know
I've
that?
I've never known that fact.
I didn't know that either. My dad, I think, Googles our names.
In club lacrosse. Wow, look at us.
Yeah, we were good, guys.
We
actually were pretty good.
I'll toot my own horn for us, or our own horns. I actually miss lacrosse. I would love to just go lax it up.
Me too. Do you want to play lacrosse when you're out here?
You and I, just in the backyard.
Bring your stick next time you come. Yeah, let's just play catch.
Okay.
Let's just throw the ball around.
Okay.
I probably have two sticks at my parents' house.
I can bring my stick. I still have my stick.
All right. I probably still have my mouth guard somewhere.
I have been looking for my go-to skincare routine for so long, and I'm so excited that support for today's episode comes from OneSkin, because if you're like me, your skin goes through so many transitions between seasons, and it is so important to nurture it from the inside out with products that do more than just protect against the sun's UV rays. Enter OneSkin.
OneSkin's products are powered by their scientifically proven peptide called OS1, and this peptide reduces accumulation of damaged aging cells, the cells that make your skin less resilient and more prone to getting those little wrinkles and those lines. Instead of masking these issues, OneSkin will address them at a cellular level, so it boosts your skin's natural barrier to lock in moisture and help protect against the elements. And they have a full line of face and body products using the OS01 shield and SPF that prevents UV-induced aging and repairs cellular aging all at once.
Plus, for a limited time, our listeners will get an exclusive 15% off OneSkin products using the code TGOG when you check out at oneskin.co. No matter the season, keep your skin looking and feeling healthy with OneSkin. I have been using their face and eye products. I feel like the combination of them, I feel like my eyes look brighter when we're recording. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code TGOG at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code TGOG. After you purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Help your skin stay younger and healthier for longer with OneSkin.
All right, but we're not talking about lacrosse, but we are talking about sports, because there was a lot of talk this year during the Super Bowl that happened just a few weeks prior about Taylor Swift. And I know there's two camps where some people are very frustrated that Taylor Swift has gotten some extra limelight and has taken over, quote unquote, was shown for like 30 seconds per game on the screen. And then there's other people that are like, oh my God, she's bringing in so much more money, so many more fans. How great is this? All of these young teenage girls are like bonding with their dads, watching the game together. Yeah. How magical. And so really, Taylor Swift has been talked about as being a good luck charm for the Kansas City Chiefs because she's dating Travis Kelce, who plays on the Kansas City Chiefs. I feel like I have to explain this, even though I don't, because I think the majority of the world
of people
knows
know that
everything about Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
But just in case people don't and people don't know who Travis Kelce is, Travis Kelce is Taylor Swift's boyfriend. So
and we also have international listeners who potentially don't follow football. Right. So.
OK, so, yeah, this footballer who is a big name on the team dates international pop country superstar Taylor Swift. And the team is doing fantastic. And in fact, they go on and they win the Super Bowl. So everyone's like, wow, Taylor Swift and all of her friendship bracelets really are the best luck ever.
Although they did win last year, too.
We're going to pretend they didn't. Okay. We're going to pretend only Taylor Swift is the reason for all of this. Perhaps Blake Lively or Ice Spice.
Are you trying to tell us that we need to date Taylor Swift to become successful? Because if that's the case, fine. Sign me up.
Yeah. Although I feel like the people that she dates, they're great. I think she dates people like either before their peak or at their peak. And then after the breakup, I feel like, what are those people doing? Well, I guess Joe Jonas is successful. And Taylor Lautner. Everyone loves Taylor. Never mind. I'm not even a Swiftie. I know very minimal facts. I can't argue about anything.
I think that's a good point to say is that neither of us are Swifties, but we love Taylor Swift and respect her. So, like, I think she's
a brilliant businesswoman.
Incredible businesswoman. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
And I'll consume her music, but I'm not a Swiftie.
Yeah. Don't ask me about any of the lore because I know absolutely nothing, nor am I interested enough to look it up. But I do appreciate every time I see interviews of her interacting with people, how kind she is. Agreed. And whatnot. Anyhow, I was thinking about the luck side of the conversation, and then it got me thinking about the curses involved in sporting teams, especially because there was some gossip online about Ice Spice being up in the box and people were like, she's throwing up satanic hand symbols and trying to throw the game.
Oh my
whatever.
Gosh.
I don't know anything about sports or any of that. So we're going to cruise past that. But I was like, oh, that is interesting thinking about individuals trying to curse games or just the curses that exist and the superstitions that exist within sports.
There's so many superstitions. I always think of what's that Bradley Cooper, Jennifer Lawrence, something playbook, and how like that whole family has all their superstitions. Like the remote has to be in the exact spot. Everyone has to sit in their seat, like all those little things.
Well, Brianna, one of my best friends and my roommate for almost all of college and after college, she was extremely superstitious. I think about her almost every day because if I'm walking outside, there's inevitably like a stop sign or like something like a pole that will divide me and another person I'm walking with. Not allowed if you're with Brianna. Be on the same side of the pole.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot of things like that. Well, in looking into some of the sports curses, I did also see an email in our inbox from our listener, Rebecca Solomon, and she had written basically just like a synopsis of Chicago's curse of the Billy Goat. So I'm going to talk about a few different curses, I guess three sports curses and superstitions total. But I want to start with Rebecca's email because I feel like Rebecca wrote it perfectly.
Rebecca, thanks for doing our work for us.
Yeah, you did the first part of my research for me. Part of me was like, should I like do my own research and reword this? And then I was like, she nailed it. So why fix what's not broken?
Exactly.
Yeah. Thank you, Rebecca.
Unless you say you don't want us to read your email in your email, we'll read it verbatim.
Yes, we will. And here we go. Rebecca says, before Chicago was the big bustling city it is today, it was once a growing town filled with cottage-style homes, wooden buildings, and early industrial shops all along cramped streets. The wooden buildings were erected in close proximity, filled with people who lived and worked in the growing community, looking to raise their families where jobs and food were plentiful and easy to access. In 1871, the city was thriving and the community was full of hardworking people who were infiltrating the once empty farming town with new life. The city setup led to one of the worst disasters in Chicago history, the Great Chicago Fire. Legend has it that a farmer was working late in his barn when his cow, Bessie, around 8:30 p.m. on October 8th, 1871, knocked over a lantern, and caught the neighbor's shed on fire. The city had been dry from a drought that summer, and the wood and the hay provided a perfect kindling for the fire to spread quickly.
Bessie.
And it did spread. It spread to other structures. The blaze roared for 2 days, consuming 3.3 square miles in central Chicago and the north side. And by the time the fire was extinguished, 300 people had lost their lives and 17,500 buildings had burned to the ground.
Was Bessie okay?
I'm gonna guess not.
Sorry, Bessie.
In the next 5 years, the remaining residents had rebuilt, returned to work, and the city had a new life. The Chicago White Sox were gracing the field of the local ballpark, and fans came out to enjoy their games and relax. In 1876, the White Stockings would win the National League championship, and they won 10 more championship titles before a new Chicago baseball team came on the scene. In 1903, the Chicago Cubs were born, and fans delighted to have a new team in town. America's game, baseball, was bringing families together, and fans flocked to the stadium to see them play. A local tavern owner was finding success with the fans flooding into his establishment before and after the games. William Sionis ran the Billy Goat Tavern near the Cubs Stadium, and he reveled in the Cubs' success. October 6, 1945, the Cubs hosted Game 4 of the World Series against the Detroit Tigers, and William, nicknamed Billy Goat Sionis, decided to bring his goat named Murphy.
Wait, okay. I'm so interested in the name of his bar because Billy is the nickname for William. Did he get a goat after naming this bar?
Yeah, did the people call, was Billy Goat like his nickname as a child? How did this come about?
Like the greatest of all time, William, and then Billy Goat. And then he was like, well, I'm going to open a bar, Billy Goat, and I'm going to get a goat.
Like how people would call someone like the kid.
Yeah.
Which is a baby. Billy Goat. Interesting. I don't know. But Murphy is brought along to the game to bring the Cubs good luck.
All right, Murphy.
And he probably also felt that by having the goat by his side, it would bring attention to the Billy Goat Tavern. Smart marketing. When the usher taking tickets saw the goat, he refused to let Murphy in. Sionis appealed the Cubs owner, P.K. Wrigley, to let Murphy into the stadium. And Wrigley agreed that Sionis could come in, but not the goat. So when William Sionis asked why his goat was not allowed, Wrigley replied, because the goat stinks.
Oh.
William Billy Goat Sionis was angered, and he replied, the Cubs ain't gonna win no more World Series so long as the goat is not allowed in Wrigley Field. And from that day on, the Cubs were cursed.
Oh my God, I love this so much.
It's so good.
All over a goat.
All over a goat. They lost game four that day, and they went on to be known as the lovable losers.
At least they're lovable.
William was quoted as saying, who stinks now? So much sass.
This is gold.
As the losing streak continued, the Chicago Cubs were officially a franchise with the curse of the Billy Goat, keeping them from winning for 71 years. Several attempts were planned to remove the curse, but none were successful. The Chicago Cubs wouldn't win a World Series until September 2016. And during the series playoffs, fans wore T-shirts saying, I ain't afraid of no goat. A nod to the famous Cubs fan, Bill Murray, who starred as one of the original Ghostbusters. Of course, the streets of Chicago erupted with fans partying for days after the 2016 World Series win and the break from the Billy Goat curse. And then she wrote, I hope you enjoyed this little bit of Chicago lore and the goat curse passed on by a Chicago Cubs phantom. So thank you, Rebecca.
Bill Murray is a big baseball. He invests in like the Saints in Minnesota.
Oh,
there's a whole documentary about Mike Vec, who's like known for creating all like the fun games and stuff that occur at baseball games now.
I love that. Okay, well, safe to say, Rebecca had me very intrigued with this. And so I was like, I love curses now that involve animals and oddities. And so the next two are going to be within that category.
Oh, hell yeah. I'm so excited.
Yeah, we're talking odd curses here.
This is fun. Okay.
Next up, the curse of the seven cats. It's a legend. For sure, because people do argue that with this story, it changes a little bit every single time it's published or retold. Sure. So the details are blurry, but regardless, there's a curse of the seven black cats. And I also find it interesting that so many people are like, this can't be true. This is a legend. Because I'm like, since when did sports fans ever forget a single detail about anything? I feel like they memorize.
Right.
Maybe it's legend. Maybe it's lore.
Sure. It also could just be passed down through people. And just as with most stories, they do change as they're told.
True. Well, whether it's completely factual or it's been embellished over time, there were seven cats said to be haunting the world of soccer.
Oh,
football. We're going football and we're going to South America.
I was a soccer girl, too. My dad always loves to tell me that he's disappointed that I didn't play soccer in college. And I was like, I wasn't that good.
Maybe if you went to the West Coast, you would. Well, actually, I feel like the West Coast is, well, I don't know. I feel like soccer is huge everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, I loved soccer, but I liked doing the school plays more.
She was a theater kid at heart.
Yeah. Look at me now, Dad. You know what I don't miss at all? That terrible, vicious week before the period when I felt like crawling out of my literal skin that was, you know, covered in pimples. Oh, and all those cravings. I probably could have eaten my own hand.
Well, you don't have to now.
It's easier to manage my PMS with Estro Control.
Estro Control is a formula developed by Happy Mammoth, a supplement company dedicated to making women's lives easier. Estro Control contains science-backed herbal extracts that help support hormonal health, especially in women who suffer from PMS.
I think it's really interesting. So the ingredients help support the liver, and that's actually where our hormones get processed, especially estrogen. So when estrogen isn't processed well in the liver, that's why some women might start having PMS and getting spots on their skin. They get cravings and feeling low all of a sudden. So Estro Control helps women feel more like themselves throughout the month because PMS can make you feel like fucking shit.
It can. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire order at happymammoth.com/TGOG and just use the code TGOG at checkout. All right, so we're going to South America for this legend.
Okay.
And we're going to Argentina. And in Argentina, ooh, they live and they breathe soccer. Their soccer team is ranked number one. And when they play, the world tunes in. I certainly remember multiple times when Argentina would be playing in the World Cup and people would take off, like take sick days and just do whatever they could to actually.
That scared me so.
Sabrina, did your door just open on its own?
Yes.
Do we have an Argentinian soccer fan in the house?
Hello?
What the has that ever happened?
I mean, to be honest, this door is like, this is my bathroom door. And like this thing sometimes gets stuck in and you have to like finagle it to get it out.
Okay.
Yeah. See, like even closing it right now. Oh, there we go. If there's a ghost here, open the door again and we'll say hello and pause and try to communicate.
We'll try to talk to you. All right, so Argentina, they have an amazing soccer team. They pretty much, it feels like they always have, but it wasn't always the case because the legend and the curse pertains to one of their most popular soccer clubs, Racing Club de Avellaneda.
Okay.
Early in the 20th century, these guys, they were on fire. This team was sick. And the team was nicknamed La Academia just for how excellent and superior they were. So like people literally called them the Academy because they were like superior, the best of the best. They won the first division title 18 times. Seven of them were consecutive and five of which were completely undefeated. So they just beat everybody.
That's crazy.
Consistently. But their winnings didn't last forever because for the next few decades, La Academia slipped back to just being the Racing Club, struggling to win like they once had. But then it happened. In 1996, they blew other teams out of the water. And then in 1967, more victory in the Intercontinental Cup. But not everyone was happy for the Racing Club. They had their moments, but then other teams came to shine and some of those fans were upset. And some of those fans were of a rival club, Club Atlético Independiente. And they were livid, despite both teams being from the same area. So they were like literally basically from the same city or town or region.
For sure.
They did not like that the racing club was winning over their team, Club Atletico Independiente.
That's the worst part about sports, is that someone's always upset.
Exactly. And so it's also wild to think that, like, this area, I know I'm butchering all of these Spanish words, by the way, so I'm so sorry, Avellaneda, that it just, like, splits in two with this extreme rivalry. It seems a bit ludicrous, but they were pissed.
Sorry. Two things that I know nothing about, like music and sports, so I will shut up now.
I mean, I feel like you're within the same music genre of where we first started, which was the Super Bowl 2024, when we got to see the best of the best of 2004.
Great. You're right.
So you're there with Luda.
Thank you.
So what do people do when they wish others worst luck? They curse them.
Of course.
And so legend says a small group of Club Atletico Independiente fans went and met with a local witch. And this local witch advised them to bring 7 dead black cats into the racing stadium to curse that soccer team.
Oh, that makes me really sad.
I know. I hope the cats were already dead.
Me too.
So they were like, okay, easy enough. And they go to the stadium. The night watchman who worked there was not even a racing fan. He was an Independiente fan. And so he's like, oh, fuck yeah, I'll let you in to try to like curse this team. Screw my employer. I don't care. I care more about my soccer team. So the watchman allowed the group to pass. And he even suggested that they bury the 7th dead cat somewhere else away from the other cluster of 6 dead cats to make the curse harder to lift. And they were like, oh, great idea. And that's exactly what they did. They buried 7 dead cats under the stadium entrance. And some say it was under the goals. Other people say it was under the stadium entrance. But regardless, the 7th was not buried with the rest of them. And over the next couple decades, the racing club seemed to have a string of bad luck. And it's like, is this because of the curse? I don't know. They've had moments and blips in time where they haven't been so great as well. So like, kind of a toss-up. But this was the very first year after the cats were buried. And so everyone was like, no, this is the curse. We're extremely superstitious now. This definitely is not the fault of the soccer players. So Independiente, the team whose fans buried these cats, that team beat Racing Club 4-0 in the last game of the season, which led them to win the Primera Division title.
My question is, like, how do people know about the buried cats? How do they know that there was a curse put upon them?
I'm sure people brag about it, right? It feels like something. Oh, is it time for the REM pod?
I really want to think it's just like the air.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, because, you know, we have had the past year of you sitting in front of that door recording episodes. That hasn't happened. What's the name of the spirit that sometimes hangs out there?
Was it Hank? Harold? I can't remember.
It was an H name.
Should I grab the spirit box real quick?
Yeah, let's just see. Let's take a moment.
Okay.
We'll test it out. All right.
I heard you. That was to the spirit. Please hold. Okay. We have our equipment. I'll put the REM pod out. I have little Sven with me for some port. Are there any spirits here that open the door? It sounded like something, didn't it?
I thought it said Harold.
Harold, are you here with us? I really can't hear it.
Ask what their name is.
What's your name? It sounds like a bunch of different voices, to be honest.
All right. Just keep the door open a crack. And then if it starts to actually like slowly open, then you run out screaming.
Well, I don't feel bad vibes right now, but I'll also leave the REM pod on if you would like.
All right. Okay. All the spirits in Sabrina's place, buckle up because this story is about to continue.
It is interesting that both times the door opened, it was during this story specifically.
Yeah, soccer fan in the house. Yeah. So racing, this team, racing club, they went from winning to losing. Mm-hmm. And in 1980, the coach was like, I've had enough, whether this is a dumb superstition or not, we need to dig up these freaking black cats because it does feel like we're being cursed. And if this helps, sure. then great, this helps.
Why not?
And so, yeah, totally. That's what they did. And during the removal, they only found six cats because the seventh cat was put somewhere else and they had no idea where it was. So knowing that the seventh cat was somewhere in the stadium, the club decided to try to reverse the curse in other ways. They buried frogs on the field in a sort of cleansing and rebirth ritual, but that didn't work. And then in 1983, racing was relegated after yet another loss. And this was the first time in history that this soccer team was demoted out of their division.
Wow. It's very like Ted Lasso.
Yeah, it feels like such a blow.
Yeah.
Eventually, the team did declare for bankruptcy in 1999.
Sad.
So the bad luck was just like across the board with this team. And you may wonder, was there even a seventh black cat? Or was the cruelest part of all of this that there were actually only six cats and the bad luck was self-inflicted?
Is that a theory?
No, but that was my question because it's like you go so long. Like, what if there just wasn't one? You know, it's like the senior right. prank when everyone brings like pigs into the... They label them like 1, 2, 3, 4, 6.
And right, to make it think that there's another one. Yeah, yeah. That you didn't get.
Right. Hmm. Apparently there was a seventh cat. So okay. they were being truthful in what happened to create this curse. But the process of lifting the black cat's jinx was far from easy. A procession took place where 15,000 fans led by the Virgin of Luján walked from the Plaza de Mayo Cathedral to the Presidente Perón Stadium, apologies for butchering all these words, and Father Jorge de la Barca, he threw holy water onto the pitch, and it appeared that he was basically exorcising this stadium. Oh. And like people call it an exorcism. But the racing club's president was like, no, this is not an exorcism. This is an act of faith. Okay, sure, call it what you want. I think there was a bit of an exorcism in the stadium.
It's a cleansing, and exorcisms aren't always like to remove possessions necessarily. No. It's to cleanse, yeah.
Well, there was some evil in that stadium and some bad luck, sure. they thought. So perhaps, you know, we don't know. This event with the priest, I think, was a very big event because I did read that there was like a comedian and then there was a concert after. Like it was a big thing.
You know what? There's no better way to cover up an exorcism than like throw a comedy show. Right after.
Right? Yeah. Cut the tension. Forget everything you guys saw here. This was just an act of faith. What do you mean? This was just us putting water on the ground. You saw nothing else.
Now laugh, you fools.
So the racing club president, he was adamant that this was nothing more than just them trying to bring some good energy into the stadium. But it didn't really work, at least not right away. During the 2001 stadium redevelopment, legend has it that they did finally unearth the seventh skeleton of the cursed black cats. It was found and it was removed. And they also, this same year, hired a coach who was very superstitious, a new coach for the team. And he would often do these rituals for good luck. And sometimes he would also do things to like jinx and hex other teams. So it was like, he should have just only been doing the good. Anywho.
You gotta do what you gotta do, but
gotta do it.
As long as someone's getting hurt, hopefully that's fine.
I know. So people were asking, like, were these seven black cats bad luck? And it's not really certain, but what we can say is that once the seventh was uncovered, it was in that very year that the racing club was crowned champion of Argentine football after 35 years of losing. So who knows?
Interesting.
Who knows? They also got a new coach. You know, like there's different things that happen. There's different players. But that was a 35-year drought.
It is just the timing is very fascinating. It is one of those things where it's like, you kind of brought this up, but like when you feel like there's, or if you've been told that there's a curse on you, do you subconsciously start to like curse yourself because you fully right. believe it?
It's like the placebo effect.
Right. And there are people who like, will say like a curse was passed on through family line and this is what happens to every single person. It's like, how much of that is real and how much of that is just psychologically created.
We'll never know. It's hard too, because especially when it's such a big group of people, like sports fans, you can't necessarily just try to get to the bottom of the psyche of one individual person and them feeling cursed. It's an entire group. And so it kind of creates this group delusion or mania or belief, like whatever you consider it to be. I don't know. But the last curse I'm going to tell you about is what I would consider the oddest of them all. This is the curse of Colonel Sanders, the Kentucky Fried Chicken guy.
And this has to do with sports?
Yep. Yeah, it has to do with baseball in Japan.
You've heard us talk about it before, but we are freaking obsessed with our Helix mattresses. We sleep like perfect little angel babies. Even like the ghost can't even wake me up. That's how peaceful I am in my sleep in my Helix mattress.
The Helix lineup offers 20 unique mattresses, including the award-winning Lux Collection, the newly released Helix Elite Collection, a mattress designed for big and tall sleepers, and even a mattress made just for kids. And it's really so simple to figure out which Helix mattress works best for you and your body, because you can go online and take the Helix sleep quiz, and it just takes under 2 minutes. They'll ask you questions about the way that you sleep, if you have anyone else who sleeps in the bed with you, how they sleep, and it will match you with the perfect mattress.
You have the Moonlight Lux and I have the Midnight Lux. My brother got a mattress. My mom got a mattress. Your family has mattresses all from Helix. It's a family affair.
One in my grandparents' house. Yeah. My parents bought a few for their house. Yeah. They just bought a couple for my Grammy's house. Helix everywhere, baby.
And Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/TGOG and use code HELIXPARTNER20. This is their best offer yet, and it won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now.
What? So, in 1985, a Japanese Kansai-based baseball team, the Hanshin Tigers, believed that they were cursed by the ghost of the KFC founder, Colonel Sanders.
I'm so intrigued.
In 1985, the Hanshin Tigers won the Central League pennant, which they hadn't won in 21 years. And to celebrate, fans who looked like the players, like basically the players' doppelgangers, the team members' doppelgangers, they all went down to Osaka's Dotonbori River to celebrate. And basically what they would do to celebrate is like this whole group of people down at the river would call out each individual person's name, a baseball player's name, and their doppelganger or someone who resembled them enough would jump into the river. So they were like all being represented by someone jumping into the river until they had the whole team. But there was one player that they really struggled to find someone to resemble, and that was Randy Bass, who was a white American on this Japanese baseball team. Randy was their star slugger, and he had done some great work to basically get them where they were. And so they were like, well,
he slugs so good.
He's slugging
all day long.
And so they're like, well, we have to include Randy in the celebration.
Of course.
But when it came to calling out Randy, like they look around and there's no one that looks like him. And so someone has an idea and they run to a nearby KFC and there was a Colonel Sanders statue outside and they took the statue of Colonel Sanders. They ran to the river and when Randy's name was called, they threw the white person or statue, Colonel Sanders, into the river dressed in a Tiger's uniform.
I love this so much because, one, it feels like you know that this is your tradition. You know that you do this. You would think that they do the work beforehand to figure out who the doppelganger is for each player.
So the they might have. It's a little blurry about like when Colonel Sanders was plucked.
Plucked. But then the effort it takes to, one, steal a statue, carry it to the river, dress it in a uniform, and then toss it over. And I'm just going to go out on a whim here and say they probably didn't really look that similar.
No, they didn't. But I mean,
Colonel Sanders is a very clear, very unique looking man.
He is. I guess he just seemed, they just needed someone who was white, I guess.
You know, they were trying to be creative. Got to give them that.
So at first, This celebration didn't seem to have any effect on the team, and the Tigers were playing better than ever, and they went on to win the Japan series. But every year after that, the team struggled to get many wins at all, finding themselves consistently at the bottom of the standings. And it's here that the urban legend of being cursed by Colonel Sanders' ghost was born, because fans soon associated the drowned statue with their losing streak. Mm. And so it was said that the Hanshin Tigers would not win another championship until the statue was recovered, because they pissed off Colonel Sanders and they had to make right by his ghost.
So basically it was still in the water and they had to get it out.
Yep.
Okay.
KFC owners all over were moving their Colonel Sanders statues inside, and they were also bolting them to the ground because they were fearful of their property just being stolen. And then the bad luck for the Tigers just wasn't subject to the games either. There were freak injuries. There were bad drafts. There were even, oh, this is so sad. There was, in one of the river celebrations where they all went and jumped in, there was a fan who drowned. And it wasn't very clear, like, how they drowned, but it was thought that they got, you know, kind of hit and maybe knocked unconscious by someone else in the water, which is just horrible.
That's really sad.
Horrible. Yeah.
Jeez.
So there was just so many horrible, horrible things happening surrounding this team. And there were several attempts to retrieve the statue over the years, but all of those attempts failed, and the curse of the Colonel grew. Eventually, in 2009, the Colonel was saved from the river, and he was brought to a nearby shrine where they cleaned the statue, and they also had this ceremonial cleansing of Colonel Sanders. And the fried chicken curse, they thought, might be broken, but it wasn't. It wasn't broken until 2023, when the Tigers won Game 7 of the 2023 Japan Series, which was their first NPB championship since 1985. And once again, the fans wanted to celebrate, and they ran to the river, and Colonel Sanders once again found himself in the river.
No.
Only this time.
You guys.
It wasn't a statue. It was someone cosplaying as the Chicken King.
Oh, okay. Thank goodness. I got so nervous.
Yeah. I mean, granted, it's only been 1 year and, like, baseball season hasn't really started, right? Or I guess maybe preseason started. But seemingly, it's okay.
So, but how did it get broken in 2023? Because that's a really long time.
Here's the thing. They just won. Like, they just were better.
Yeah. Okay.
Soon as he rose from the river, they started winning again. It was many years later, but it's still, you know, they still associate it as, like, this is the curse, and it was finally lifted, and then the team got to finally be better. So to wrap this up, what have we learned? In the realm of sports, curses often weave themselves into the fabric of teams and franchises, haunting them with inexplicable misfortunes and dashed hopes. So are these curses real, or are they a welcomed excuse for poorly performing teams? That sounds so mean of me to write. Like, do they just suck? Are they trying their best, but they're not enough? So rude.
We have a lot of things to back up our belief of this, but we were like, did someone curse us? Because we were having so many issues.
Yeah,
we now know it's because we're haunted. But for a while, we were like, is all of this that we're dealing with a curse?
That's true. And it wasn't just, we were kind of saying it on the podcast, like, oh my God, we've been cursed. Like, people could maybe take it as a joke. But behind the scenes, you and I were very much like, what happened? We
truly
did feel like something was, like, we had there's an extra invisible obstacle that wasn't there before.
I agree. Sometimes I still think it, you know?
Yeah, same. We blame things on the ghost and on the curse.
Just like these sports. Wait, see, we are big sports gals. We're just like sports.
Did you say we're just like sports?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
JLS, just like sports.
Well, for those who suffered at the hands of Chicago's Billy Goat and the Black Cats of Argentina and Colonel Sanders in Japan, I'm going to guess that they're going to say, this isn't made up. This isn't just a bad year for our teams. These curses are real because they feel very, very real. And I think the only thing we can say with certainty from our experience with the podcast is that when there are so many energies in one place, and some of them wishing for luck and fortune and some of them wishing harm, another team is bound to fall victim of some sort of curse, some sort of manifested energy. Mm-hmm. Soon enough, which team it will be, who will suffer, we'll have to wait and see.
Hopefully it's not us anymore.
Well, we're not sports.
I don't know. I've worked up a sweat a couple times while recording this podcast.
We own lacrosse sticks, so we are sports.
I'm wearing a Yankees jacket, so I am sports. No, I do really think this is fascinating. And these are like such fun, odd curses. But there's also so many. Like, it is interesting to me because William, the Billy Goat bar owner, for example, he kind of out loud said the sentiment of, as long as my goat can't enter your stadium, like, you're going to lose, whatever. That's like a sentiment that, yes, he meant it and he was angry, but I wouldn't, and I don't know him, but maybe I don't think he's like a practicing curser. I don't think he like curses people all the time. Is that just like a, he specifically has a ton of power? Because I think about how many viewers there are and how many fans there are. I'll go back mm-hmm. to football. Most sports, though, like sitting on their couch or even at the stadium watching a game, the people who are like, I curse the other team, I want them to lose. Why do those not make as much of an impact?
Right. I don't know. Well, who knows the popularity with like William the Billy Goat? He had so many people going to his tavern. So I wonder if it was more of something where like he openly talked about it after, like, oh, they wouldn't let my goat in. I said they won't win this. Like, you know, had a mm-hmm. lot of attitude and was sharing his opinions. And maybe that sort sure. of swirled and manifested. And more and more yeah. people thought about it. More and more people have that nervousness and are projecting yeah. that energy onto their team who they're in the stadium, like they're in the seats watching play.
Right.
Like you do respond to the energy around you. Like we felt even on tour, there were certain venues, you know, certain mm-hmm. groups where like you're more serious or you're more silly, like based on kind of the energy that you're picking up around you.
I guess it's just to me, then it means that there are so many curses put onto sports teams that are like constantly being combated by like love and the support of the fans of that team and vice yeah. versa back and forth that we will literally never know about. But they exist.
It's a balance. It's just sometimes that balance becomes unequal and maybe curses and are created. Cursed.
I promise I only curse people if they do wrong and if they're mean to my friends and family.
We're very reliant on our phones, right? We really use yes. them for everything at this point. Yes. But did you know that you could also use your phone for some sexy me time?
I did know this.
Your fantasies are safe with Dipsy. Just don't forget to use your headphones, especially if you are on a flight, which you're about to be, Sabrina. Yes. So this is a reminder.
Or you know what? You can spice it up with a partner, put it on loud for you and your partner to enjoy together. Dipsy is an app full of hundreds of short, sexy audio stories designed by women for women. They bring scenarios to life with immersive soundscapes and realistic characters. You know, you can have these fantasies where you like get away from the routine of your life and have vacation flings or fantasize about second chance romances, all these amazing scenarios. They also have soothing sleep stories and wellness sessions, which are really, really nice to unwind and wind down from a long day.
They release new content every week, and you can let Dipsy be your go-to place to spice up your me time, explore your fantasies, relax and unwind, or even heat things up with a partner. For listeners of the show, Dipsy is offering an extended 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/TGOG. That's 30 days of full access for free when you go to dipsystories.com/TGOG. dipsystories.com/TGOG.
So I have two shorter stories. Basically, I picked one that's sports and one that's a curse.
Perfect. Okay. The best of both worlds. Why did I say that? Sports, the best of both worlds. My two loves coming together.
This is when you like reveal to people that you've like low-key been like wanting to start a sports podcast.
I'm actually a semi-pro professional athlete on the side. That's my real gig. This is just for fun, guys.
All that talk about your like watermelon, like crushing thighs or thigh crusher. You actually are the thigh crusher. Like that is yeah. your side gig.
I'm almost Olympic level shot put. Shot putter? What do you even call them?
I was picturing, I don't know the name, but like WWA.
Oh, like the wrestling?
Yeah.
if I had to do the wrestling, I would want to do the Libre. What are they called? Like Libre Noches or whatever.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, with the masks.
That's not the right word. But where they wear the masks and they like have a whole thing in the ring and can wear a cape if you want.
I support you. You do you. Okay, so this is from our listener, Anna. And it is called Ghost Turned Off Super Bowl Lights. Howdy, Corinne and Sabrina. Thank you for having such an amazing podcast. I had no idea there were people out there just as fascinated with paranormal activity as I am. Long story short, my mother and I have a sixth sense, which is a blessing and a curse sometimes. But I consider myself blessed because my sixth sense has helped me through a difficult time of grief. I have so many stories I can tell you, but the one I want to share with you took place my freshman year of high school and is one that I pray can give comfort to those who may need it. February 3rd, 2013 was the 49ers versus Ravens Super Bowl game. My cousin Sergio was a huge Niner fan and had hopes of going to a Super Bowl game where his beloved Niners were competing in one day. My family is sports oriented, so we were going to throw a huge Super Bowl party because Sergio's Niners made it to the Super Bowl. It was 11:27 p.m. on February 2nd, 2013, which is the night before the game, when suddenly I was awoken by the voice of my cousin Charlie telling me, "Nana, wake up, wake up, wake up." But here's the thing. My cousin Charlie lived hundreds of miles away. His voice could not be in my room in San Antonio, Texas. I opened my eyes. Sure enough, no one was there. But as soon as I lay my head back down, I heard my dad's phone ring from across the room. The phone rang, my dad picked it up, and immediately began to sob.
No, no.
I ran to my parents' room and I looked at their faces and it was sadness and heartbreak. I knew the news that I was about to get was horrible. I hate that the first thing I asked was, who died? Because I definitely wasn't ready to be told that my cousin Sergio, Charlie, and my uncle Efren were murdered in the family store just 20 minutes before the call. I was speechless.
Oh my God, my entire body just covered with chills. That is horrific.
I was speechless because I realized then that it was Charlie waking me up after he died. Going back to bed that night was really hard, yet this was the first time I had experienced sleep paralysis. The following morning, while trying to make lunch, I broke down in tears and prayed out loudly next to my mother, "Sergio, your Niners made it to the bowl. Go see your Niners play in the Super Bowl. And do something at the game to let me know you are all just fine. Make a crazy play happen. Force a Raven field goal to not make it. Or, I don't know, turn off the stadium lights." Do you guys remember what happened during the Niner and Raven Super Bowl game? The stadium lights turned off, causing a blackout.
Oh my God. Okay, because if it were any of the other two, I'd be like, well, you know, it's a game. It could happen. But the stadium lights going out, that's undoubtedly.
Her mom was also right next to her. Okay. As soon as I saw this on live TV, my mother and I turned to look at each other and she and I start sobbing uncontrollably. Wow. But I felt in that moment that my grief was healed. Knowing that what I prayed for was answered and knowing that my boys were okay gave me comfort. Right after the funerals, the family gathered at my sister's house and my cousins were messing around with the iPads and making stupid videos. And when they replayed their videos, they swore they saw our uncle standing behind my aunt, his wife, looking at the family. We went frame by frame and you can faintly see my uncle's glasses and silhouette behind her. The family was brought to tears and rejoiced knowing my uncle was looking out for us. I firmly believe my cousin Charlie is my guardian angel because it is his voice I hear when I need it the most, from problem solving to words of encouragement or even warnings. More often than not, I always find the combination of letters S-E-C, Sergio, Efren, Charlie everywhere. Keep up the great work, M.
Wow. What a terrible, terrible thing to happen to so many people that you love all at the same time. I can't even imagine the horror of facing that. But to have his voice with you so often and to have his voice with you immediately after his passing and all of those signs that, like, yes, they're together. They're watching the game they wanted to watch. I think that that is really beautiful and that does feel a bit comforting, especially given that it was so soon after what happened to them.
So horrific too. Like,
yeah.
Because when I first read it, the like, "Nana, wake up, Nana, wake up." I don't know if that was like her nickname, but when I first read that, I thought it was like mother or, you know, grandma or something like that. Wake up. that she was like overhearing. And I was like, oh, is it going to be the grandmother who passed away? But it was, I think it was Charlie trying to wake her up, like calling her like Anna, but Nana.
Right. My gosh.
But the stadium lights.
Did you read the book, If I Stay?
No, but I think, is there a movie? Did I see that movie?
I think they did make it into a movie, yeah. Yeah, but I think it's like a YA novel, If I Stay.
Okay.
But it's basically like about a girl whose family gets in a car accident. Her whole family, or some of her family, passes. And then she's just kind of like wandering in the astral plane trying to decide if she stays or if she moves on with the family members who also passed. Mm-hmm. It's, oh God, I cried so much in that book. But it does make me think a little bit of this situation too, that he was like running to her a bit right after it happened for help or just to alert her of it happening and kind of like being in this in between. But yeah, so the stadium lights is, there's so much power and energy to literally do that.
Yeah, wild. Hey,
he wanted to give his family a sign. He found a way to do it.
Okay, I have another one. This is from our listener, Kate. It's called Encounter Story, Dead Magicians Tried to Curse Me. Hi, Guestesses. Hi. I love your podcast. I listen to it all day while I work. I usually work alone doing molecular testing all day. So when I listen to YouTube ghouls, I feel like I'm just hanging out with my friends. Also, my lab is haunted and the ghost, I call him Ghosty, loves the podcast too. So anyway, I've always been sensitive to the other side and I occasionally saw ghosts as a kid and I communicated with dead family members and friends through dreams and have been very sensitive to energy. A few years ago, I was dead asleep in my bed when I was jolted awake. There was a strong feeling of terror and dread in my room and I could sense three entities next to me. I opened my eyes, but I couldn't focus, and it looked like everything in my room was blurry and kind of bouncing around. I then felt something grab my arm and hiss into my ear. I'm going to tell you something.
You, no, don't.
I tried to say no, but only could whimper, and I could not pull my arm away. Then suddenly, I saw a blue swirl of light and energy in the corner of my room, and everything stopped. I could see straight again. I could move and the entities were gone. And that blue energy in the corner dissipated too. It was about 11:15 at this point. I was terrified out of my mind. Also, Kate wrote, I go to bed early because I have to leave for work at 6 a.m. I was like, 11:15 is not early.
No, that's super late. Like, that's what I wake up to have my first pee in the middle of the night.
Yes. I was terrified out of my mind and had no clue what happened. So I turned all the lights on in my house and I called my best friend sobbing. I was crying so hard that he thought someone had died. I told him I wasn't sure what happened to me or if it was even real, but I was too scared to sleep. I didn't tell him exactly what happened because he has anxiety and ghosts scare him. So he stayed on the phone with me for a few hours until I was calmer and he went to bed. I did not sleep at all. I still felt terrible the next day. I felt like there's a black cloud hanging over me and I randomly kept crying. One of my other friends texted me and I told him everything that happened. He's sensitive like me, so I thought maybe he might be able to help me sort out what happened. He contacted one of his friends who is a psychic to get her opinion. And she, the psychic, said that I had been attacked by three dead magicians who tried to put curses on my third eye chakra to limit my oversight of the world and my own life and to impede my thinking and make me feel powerless. She said that old dead magicians sometimes refuse to cross over and try to take part in life by influencing someone with a lot of potential by driving them crazy or making them sick. She said she removed the curses and gave me a meditation to make my aura stronger and to protect myself from negative entities. She said fear had made my aura thin because I was going through a lot of things at the time that allowed them to attack my third eye. Truly, it took me months to recover emotionally and mentally from what happened. I slept with my lights on for months. I had to carry protective crystals everywhere and did the meditation she prescribed every day. The attack had unintentionally consequences. It opened me up even more because my third eye had been cleansed out. I could now see and communicate with ghosts and spirits more easily and was much more sensitive to energy. I ended up an apprentice to a Reiki master / medium who taught me how to use and control my abilities. I'm now a Reiki master and have the ability to bring through messages from angels and other people's guardians' angels. My teacher told me she could see Archangel Michael with me, protecting me and helping me through this difficult time in my life. Blue is the color of his energy. I later realized that he had been there that night, the blue swirl of light in the corner. He had stopped the attack. Stay spooky, ladies. Keep up the great work. Kate.
I have so many thoughts. One, I feel like the Dead Magicians Club should be a book.
100%. Is it
we
not?
We can try to make something.
TM.
Add it to the scroll. Also, for Kate to be a target and for it to like truly affect her this much, to me means that there was so much potential and so much power within Kate that was like right there. That either Kate knew or was about to like fully unlock that felt like a threat to these magicians or entities or however these spirits right. or beings are, that they felt like they had to do something right away, right now, to try to
prevent,
I guess,
it.
Like diminish, yeah, like blow out
or
her
take
light.
It from her, yeah,
yeah.
If they wanted to take her power,
and then who did you? It was Archangel Michael, you said,
yeah, who protected her.
It is fascinating to me too, when because I feel like so many times I often associate protection with loved ones or like guardian angels, but it. Mm-hmm. It is so interesting when they are like biblically known angels that are said to come through.
Did you know that the reference of feet in the Bible is actually penis?
What? Not me wanting to read the Bible for the first time.
So I took a Bible class in high school and I retained zero information except for that.
Oh, man.
Not in every reference, but I actually looked this up the other day.
In some of them.
I was trying to prove it.
Is the Bible a lot more steamy than I thought it was? Am I going to have to start reading it?
Let's see. Feet symbolize in the Old Testament as a euphemism for genitals and so forth.
Well, look at that.
Yeah.
Also, I saw someone the other day that was like, if Adam didn't eat the apple, if Eve ate the apple, then why do we call it an Adam's apple? Like it's stuck in his throat.
Interesting.
I can get on like Bible conspiracies. I like that stuff.
And this is where we get into trouble.
Yeah, we won't talk about it on the podcast, but I don't have time to be a Swiftie because I also am going to be spending my time looking up all of these things. Did you know this passage actually means that? Oh, wow. Well, I'd never even heard of that passage in the first place, but now I'm intrigued.
I think like, to know someone biblically is to like have had sex with someone.
Oh, it's like an avatar where you like put your tails together.
I'm just going to start saying like if I've had sex with someone, I'm going to say like, oh, yeah, I know them biblically. I've seen their feet.
Wow. Wow. Oh, my gosh.
Okay, I'm going to go get some confession because I've just sinned so many times and I'm literally wearing a religious item that says Godmother. So
that's literally exactly what I was thinking when I went silent. I was like, we need to do something to repent.
Pray for me.
Pray for everyone out there. Let's all just have good vibes, no curses.
Yeah. But if you've been cursed or if you've cursed someone, please let us know. And if you have like family superstitions, like that would be a really fun episode to do, like superstitions that families have. Email them to us at twogirlsonegghostpodcast@gmail.com. We would love to hear them. We'd love to hear all of your stories. Please join us on Patreon if you want to hear my mom's dirty little secrets. And if you want ad-free episodes, 1 week early, extra episodes, and all the fun campfire stories that happen every Tuesday night, book club, all of the fun things that are happening over there.
Thank you to all of you who come back every single week. Thank you to Jamie, our editor, who also comes back every single week to yeah. edit our audio and video. We couldn't do it without you. And we wish you all the best of luck.
Yes, we love you all very much.
We will see you on the other side.
Very spooky.